Chapter 6, Safety, Environmental Stewardship, and Protection. This chapter describes general petroleum safety considerations to include safety, fire prevention and fighting procedures, grounding and bonding, fuel properties and characteristics, fuel handling techniques, environmental responsibility, and first aid measures. Section 1, Petroleum Properties. This section describes the properties of various petroleum products to include flashpoint, specific gravity, and explosive range. Description of fuels. Petroleum products are materials produced from crude oil as it is processed in oil refineries. Most of petroleum is transformed into petroleum products, which include several categories of fuel. Petroleum products serve the purpose as fuel used to operate ground transportation, aviation, and maritime fleets, and other systems to ensure operational readiness of the force for the DOD. Refineries produce various types of petroleum products. These petroleum products include gasoline, jet fuel, diesel fuel, heating oil, and heavier fuel oils. Heavier oils can produce lubricating and other heavy oils. Lighter oils can produce gasoline and jet fuels. Appendix C provides data on petroleum products factors. The opportunities for the use of alternate fuels, such as renewable and bioenergy, is a goal for DOD in order to reduce the dependence of petroleum products. However, DOD's reliance on petroleum-based fuel will be sustained for years to come. Fuel types. Although JP-8 is the single fuel on the battlefield, the military uses several types of fuel to run its equipment. The types of fuel uses are fuel oil. Fuel oil is a fraction obtained from petroleum distillation, either as a distillate or a residue. Broadly speaking, fuel oil is any liquid petroleum product that is burned in a furnace or boiler for the generation of heat or used in an engine for the generation of power. If used in this sense, diesel is a type of fuel oil. The term fuel oil is also used in a stricter sense to refer only to the heaviest commercial fuel that can be obtained from crude oil. Diesel fuel. Diesel fuel in general is fuel used in diesel engines whose fuel ignition takes place without spark as a result of compression of the inlet air mixture and then injection of fuel. Glow plugs help achieve high temperatures for combustion during engine startup in cold weather. Diesel fuel is heavier than gasoline. It is similar to heating oil, but has a cetane number of 40 or more. The most common type of diesel fuel is number 2, a specific fractional distillate of petroleum. Alternatives that are not derived from petroleum, such as biodiesel, are increasingly being developed and adopted. Ultra-low sulfur diesel is a standard for defining diesel fuel with substantially lowered sulfur contents. Kerosene. Kerosene is a combustible hydrocarbon liquid, widely used as a fuel in industry and in households. Kerosene is widely used to power jet engines of aircraft, jet fuel, and some rocket engines, but is also commonly used as a cooking, heating, and lighting fuel. It is used as a cooking fuel in portable stoves for outdoor enthusiasts and is used as a heat source at construction sites and as a home heating fuel in portable and installed kerosene heaters. Gasoline. Gasoline is a petroleum-derived liquid that is used primarily as a fuel in internal combustion engines. It is a volatile mixture of liquid hydrocarbons that can vary widely in their physical and chemical properties. The anti-knock characteristic of a particular gasoline blend is measured by its octane rating. Gasoline is produced in several grades of octane rating. Tetraethyl lead and other lead compounds are no longer used to regulate and increase octane rating, but many other additives are put into gasoline to improve its chemical stability, control corrosiveness, provide fuel system cleaning, and determine performance characteristics under intended use. It may be blended or be required to be blended with oxygenates, such as methyl tert-butyl ether and alcohols such as ethanol, to improve octane ratings, extend fuel supply, or reduce exhaust emissions. Aviation gasoline. Aviation gasoline, AVGAS, is an aviation fuel used in spark-ignited internal combustion engines to propel aircraft. Aviation gasoline is the most restrictive fuel produced in a refinery. Strict process control is required to assure that the stringent requirements are met for anti-knock rating, volatility, and calorific values. Careful handling is essential during storage and distribution to guard against various forms of contamination. AVGAS is distinguished from MOGAS, motor gasoline, which is the everyday gasoline used in motor vehicles. Unlike MoGas, some grades of Avgas still contain tetraethyl lead, a toxic substance used to prevent engine knocking, detonation. 100 low lead is the most common type of Avgas. It contains about one half the tetraethyl lead allowed in 100-130. Jet fuels or aviation turbine fuel. Jet fuel or aviation turbine fuel is a type of aviation fuel designed for use in aircraft powered by gas turbine engines. It is colorless to straw-colored in appearance. The most commonly used fuels for commercial aviation are Jet A and Jet A1, which are produced to a standardized international specification. Military organizations around the world use a different classification system of JP for jet propellant numbers. Some are almost identical to their civilian counterparts and differ only by the amounts of a few additives. Jet A is similar to F-24. Jet A1 is similar to JP-8. Jet B is similar to Jet Propulsion Fuel Type 4, JP-4. Other military fuels are highly specialized products and are developed for very specific applications. Jet fuels are sometimes classified as kerosene or naphtha type. Kerosene type fuels include Jet A, Jet A1, JP-5, F-24, and JP-8. Naphtha type jet fuels, sometimes referred to as wide cut jet fuels, include Jet B and JP-4. Jet fuel additives. Note, should it become necessary to inject fuel system icing inhibitor, FISI, static dissipating additive, SDA, or corrosion inhibitor / lubricity improver, CI/LI, exercise extreme caution. All of these additives, in the neat form, are extremely dangerous and can cause serious health problems, both near and long term. Additives are usually injected by the defense fuel supply point. However, there are exceptions when petroleum organizations must inject the additives. FISI prevents the water in fuel from freezing at normal water freezing temperatures and helps prevent microbiological growth. Frozen water particles that collect on the filter screens can cause fuel starvation. This leads to engine failure. As fuel cools, dissolved water will become free water. FISI combines with the free water to prevent this now undissolved water from freezing. If the FISI content of the fuel decreases, the icing protection also decreases. If JP-8 or F-24 contains less than the use limit, then blend it to use limits as soon as possible. This can be done by blending existing stocks, by locally injecting FISI during intraterminal transfer, or by resupply. If the mission prohibits the possibility of blending or inhibiting low FISI stock, permission for limited use of stocks can be obtained by contacting the USAPC through appropriate command channels. SDA increases the fuel's conductivity, thereby permitting rapid depletion of any static charge generated during movement. A conductivity unit level below the use limit increases the hazard for explosion. A conductivity unit level above the use limit affects fuel probes onboard aircraft. Blending or injection may be necessary to obtain the required level. CI/LI in fuel attaches itself to metal surfaces, such as the interior of a pipeline. It reduces the effects of water and particulate contamination from corroding the interior surface of the pipeline. CI/LI is the most significant component to JP-8 or F-24 that provides lubricity to fuel-wetted parts in reciprocating engines. Note, refer to MIL Standard 3004-1-alpha for the receipt and use limits for jet fuel additives. Characteristics and hazards. There are several characteristics and hazards the petroleum fuel handler must know to perform their petroleum duties. The characteristics and hazards are as follows. Petroleum properties. The primary danger while handling petroleum is the chance of a fire or explosion. The paragraphs that follow describe petroleum properties affecting flammability and explosive characteristics. The paragraphs also discuss issues and techniques related to reducing the chance of fire and explosion when storing and handling petroleum products. Flashpoint. Fuel flashpoint is the lowest temperature the fuel vapor will catch fire momentarily, flash, when exposed to a flame. The lower the fuel flashpoint, the more dangerous it is. Some sample flashpoints are Avgas, negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and JP-8, 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Explosive range. Petroleum vapor and air may form a range of mixtures that are flammable and possibly explosive. This range is called the mixture's flammability limit, explosive range, or explosive limit. A mixture in the explosive range ignites when it contacts a spark, flame, or other ignition source. In open spaces, this causes an intense fire. In enclosed spaces, such as an empty tanker, the mixture explodes. JP-8's explosive range, for example, is from 0.7 to 5% by volume of fuel vapor per given air volume. Any mixture above 5% by volume of fuel vapor does not ignite because it is too rich. For example, there is not enough oxygen present to burn the fuel. This is known as the mixture's upper explosive limit. A mixture less than 0.7% by volume of fuel vapor does not ignite because it is too lean. For example, there is not enough fuel in the air to burn. This is known as the mixture's lower explosive limit. A mixture's lower explosive limit is formed at about the product's flash point. Thus, avgas vapors can burn or explode at temperatures as low as negative 40 degrees. Explosive ranges vary among fuel types. The key point is, an empty or nearly empty petroleum tank or container is still very dangerous due to remaining fuel vapors. Vapor pressure. Vapor pressure is a measure of a fuel's tendency to form vapors, known as its volatility. Laboratory technicians normally use the Reed method to determine a liquid's vapor pressure. They determine vapor pressures at 100 degrees Fahrenheit for comparison purposes. Knowing a liquid's vapor pressure has little practical application for petroleum handlers. However, petroleum products' relatively high vapor pressures, and in particular, gasoline and aviation fuels' high vapor pressures, further show how easily fuels form explosive vapor mixtures in normal temperatures. Distillation range. Petroleum products are a mixture of hundreds of different chemical compounds. They boil, vaporize, over a relatively broad temperature range compared to pure substances. This temperature range is known as product distillation range. A product's distillation range is another relative volatility indicator. A product with a relatively low distillation range might vaporize in hoses or pumps, causing vapor lock. Aviation fuels, in particular, have distillation ranges in the temperature ranges encountered during military operations. Electrostatic susceptibility. Electrostatic susceptibility is the relative degree a fuel will take on or build up a static electrical charge. Aviation peculiar fuels have relatively high electrostatic susceptibilities. This multiplies the danger of these highly volatile, flammable fuels. Auto ignition temperature. Auto ignition temperature is the lowest temperature a fuel itself will catch fire spontaneously. Some auto ignition temperatures are avgas 825 degrees Fahrenheit to 960 degrees Fahrenheit, 440.5 degrees Celsius to 515.5 degrees Celsius, and JP-8, 440 degrees Fahrenheit to 475 degrees Fahrenheit, 227 degrees Celsius to 246 degrees Celsius. Low autoignition temperatures present a particular hazard in aviation refueling operations. An idling turbine engine, such as a helicopter engine, produces an exhaust with a temperature between 440 degrees Fahrenheit to 475 degrees Fahrenheit. Even after the engine is shut down, its temperature stays in this range for quite some time. If this engine temperature radiates to JP-8, the fuel could catch fire or explode. This could happen if a helicopter exhaust blows on a piece of refuel equipment or a fuel handler drags a hose across a hot engine. Product contamination. Contamination is the addition to a petroleum product of some material not normally present. Contamination may consist of solid foreign matter, free or emulsified water, mixed fuels or grades of fuel, or all of these. Products may also be contaminated with chemical or biological materials that may not be readily visible. The types of contamination are: sediment is the general term applied to foreign solid matter. Sediment found most often consists of bits of rust, paint, metal, rubber, lint, dirt, and sand. Water is one of the most common contaminants. It can get into fuel through leaks and condensation. Dissolved water in fuel is like vaporized moisture in the air. Fresh or salt water may be present in small droplets that produce a cloud effect. In larger droplets that cling to the sides of containers, in very large amounts that settle to the bottom in a separate layer, or in emulsions. Emulsions usually occur when fuel droplets become suspended in water. This may happen when fuel is agitated in the presence of water, as when it passes through a pump. The heavier the fuel, the longer the emulsion may last. Mixed fuels, or grades of fuels, can be as serious as any other form of contamination. Different kinds of fuel must be stored in separate tanks and pumped one at a time so that fuels will not mix in lines, filter separators, pumps, and petroleum vehicles. Be sure to mark all systems to show what type of fuel each is handling at the time. Mixed fuels or grades are hard to detect without testing. Product deterioration. Deterioration is any undesirable chemical or physical change that takes place in a product during storage or use. Although deterioration may be initiated or hastened by storage conditions, it is not usually observable to petroleum handling personnel. The most common forms of product deterioration are weathering, which is the loss of the more volatile components, gum formation, and the loss of oxidation inhibitors, tetraethyl lead, and anti-icing agents. The degree of deterioration can be determined only by periodic laboratory testing. Fuel properties and behavior after combustion. Additional fuel properties and behavior after combustion are as follows. Heat of combustion. One relative measure of fire intensity or severity is the amount of heat produced as the fuel burns. Aviation peculiar fuels such as JP8 and avgas have higher heats of combustion than multipurpose or motor fuels. Therefore, they produce more severe fires. In any case, all petroleum fires are intense. They require prompt action to quench the large amounts of heat produced. Flame spread rate. Aviation fuels containing avgas or kerosene mixtures have flame spread rates of from 700 feet to 800 feet per minute. Kerosene-based fuels, JP8 or F24, Jet A1/A, DF2, have flame spread rates of approximately 100 feet per minute. Specific gravity. Specific gravity is a relative measure of liquid density. Water's specific gravity is 1.0. All petroleum products have a specific gravity less than 1.0. For example, avgas specific gravity is 0.70 and JP8 specific gravity is 0.80. This means they are lighter than water and will float on any water surface. Using water to put out a petroleum fire will cause it to spread, as petroleum is carried along on the water stream flowing away from the fire. For this reason, use foams or dry chemicals, if possible, to put out petroleum fires. Solubility. Fuels will not dissolve in water. This means water-based foams can be used for putting out petroleum fires. Flammable and combustible products. Hazardous liquids, including petroleum products, are classified as flammable and combustible. In these broad categories, there are several class designations based on a liquid's volatility. Flammable and combustible liquids. Class 1 has a flash point below 100 degrees Fahrenheit, 37.8 degrees Celsius, and a vapor pressure not above 40 pounds per square inch, absolute, at 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Examples include gasoline, JP4, and avgas. Class 2 has a flash point equal to 100 degrees Fahrenheit, 37.8 degrees Celsius, but less than 140 degrees Fahrenheit, 60 degrees Celsius. Examples include diesel, kerosene, and JP8. Class 3 has a flash point equal to or greater than 140 degrees Fahrenheit, 60 degrees Celsius. Examples include JP5. Chapter 6 of the print version of ATP 4-43 describes the various flammable and combustible liquids classes. Heated liquids are more volatile. Therefore, heated combustible liquids require the same safety precautions as flammable liquids. Section 2, Safety and Health. Petroleum products can be handled and stored safely if users understand and respect the unique safety hazards they present. This section outlines hazard control measures and safety techniques to facilitate the safe receipt, storage, and issue of bulk petroleum. Explosions and fires caused by ignition of combustible mixtures of bulk petroleum vapors and air cause some of the most serious bulk fuel-related accidents. The transfer and storage of petroleum, oil, and lubricants presents safety hazards and precautions that bulk fuel managers and handlers must consider and alleviate during those processes. Thus, controlling bulk fuel vapor formation and ignition sources at all times is critical. Safety training is the key to preventing accidents. Safety training starts during the soldier's initial entry training and continues throughout their military service. Sustainment commanders are responsible for ensuring all fuel handlers are trained to know about petroleum and the safety principles for handling and using petroleum products. In addition, handlers learn self-care techniques, fire prevention, first aid, and emergency safety procedures. The United States Army Quartermaster School Petroleum and Water Department website provides updates and messages regarding safety and health in petroleum operations for the petroleum handling personnel to review. Storage and tank vehicles. Storage tank safety requires adequate distances between storage tanks and proper maintenance. Tank vehicle safety also requires adequate distances between storage tanks and proper maintenance, as well as proper safety fill levels, proper grounding, certain loading and unloading procedures, and other procedures to ensure safe handling of petroleum products. Collapsible fabric fuel tanks. To avoid complete destruction of a tank farm by fire, units provide proper spacing between collapsible fabric fuel tanks by properly constructing earthen berms around the tanks. See TB10-5430-253-13 for the proper dimensions for constructing fuel berms. In addition, units provide a minimum of 50 feet, 15 meters, between collapsible fabric fuel tanks and the following. Uninhabited building for new projects, pump house or filter separator building, taxiing aircraft, fence, if space is a limitation, 9,100 feet, 30 meters, if space is available, and roads outside of a security fence, overhead power and communication lines, pad-mounted transformers, parked aircraft, any building other than maintenance. Provide a minimum of 100 feet, 30 meters, between collapsible fabric fuel tanks, and the following. Inhabited buildings, truck or tank car offloading station, truck fill station, property lines, highways, new petroleum operations building, airport surface detection radar equipment. Provide a minimum of 300 feet, 90 meters, between collapsible fabric fuel tanks and the following. Aircraft warning radar antennas, areas where airborne surveillance radar may be operated. Provide a minimum of 500 feet, 150 meters, between collapsible fabric fuel tanks and airport ground approach and control equipment. Safe distances for fuel storage in hardwall tanks. To avoid complete destruction of a tank farm by fire, units space the tanks a minimum clear distance of 2 diameters or 3 diameters center to center for steel tanks, avoiding rigid geometric patterns. Spacing may be increased to 500 feet. But spacing over 500 feet is usually undesirable because of the length of the pipe between tanks and larger crews needed to operate the tank farms. A minimum distance of 100 feet will be maintained between the shell of any tank and the tank farm boundary line. The minimum clear distance between shells of adjacent above-ground vertical tanks will not be less than the diameter of the larger tank. Tankers are placed at a minimum of 25 feet apart, measurement taken from the center of the tank trucks, during transfer operations. Be aware that empty tankers are at least as dangerous, if not more dangerous, as full tankers due to residual vapors. Refer to UFC 3-460-01 for minimum distance from adjacent buildings and property lines. Tank vehicle operations safety. Several factors are considered when laying out a parking area for vehicles. The following are considerations when determining the proper layout for a vehicle park. Leave enough space between the rows of refuelers so they can be driven out quickly in an emergency. Position a tanker so it is headed toward the nearest exit and away from buildings or other obstructions. Do not let other vehicles block exit routes. Ground fuel vehicles. Take precautions to prevent any fuel leak out of a tank vehicle from draining towards a nearby building or water. Parking of refueler vehicles and trailers provide a minimum of 25 feet between the center lines of adjacent vehicles and trailers when in the parked position, or 10 feet minimum of clear space between parked fuel vehicles and trailers, whichever is greater. Provide side protection, such as a common masonry wall of brick or tile, when needed. Provide a minimum of 50 feet, 15 meters, between a refueler parking area and the following. Uninhabited building for new projects. Pump house or filter separator building. Taxiing aircraft. Fence, if space is a limitation, 100 feet, 30 meters, if space is available, and roads outside of a security fence. Overhead power and communication lines. Pad-mounted transformers. Parked aircraft. Any building other than maintenance. Provide a minimum of 100 feet, 30 meters, between a refueler parking area and the following. Inhabited buildings, truck or tank car offloading station, truck fill station, property lines, highways, new petroleum operations building, airport surface detection radar equipment. Provide a minimum of 300 feet, 90 meters, between refueler parking areas and the following. Aircraft warning radar antennas. Areas where airborne surveillance radar may be operated. Provide a minimum of 500 feet, 150 meters, between refueler parking areas and airport ground approach and control equipment. Note, for more vehicle-specific spacing guidance, reference the appropriate vehicle technical manual for required distance between respective vehicles. When possible, conduct petroleum operations on level ground. Always stop the engine and set the brakes. Always chalk the vehicle wheels when it is stopped. To chalk the wheels, place an approved chalk block between the front and rear tandem tires of the rear axle. Chalk the tractor and trailer of tractor-trailer combinations. Ensure the chalk block is positioned in the proper position for vehicles parked on a slope. During all loading, unloading, and fuel servicing operations, keep tractors coupled to tank semi-trailers. However, if the semi-trailer is designated and appropriately administered as a temporary storage tank, the tractor can be disconnected. Other considerations include: ensure the receiving vehicle's driver has been trained on how to properly operate the dispensing nozzle and wear proper PPE. A driver familiar with his vehicle is more likely to fill it safely to the proper level without spillage. Then ensure the driver is actually properly operating the dispensing nozzle and wearing the appropriate PPE. Check the pressure/vacuum relief valves frequently in cold weather to be sure they are operating properly. Refer to the appropriate TM and coordinate with maintenance personnel to determine minimum and maximum pounds per square inch, PSI, of pressure relief valves. Post no smoking signs around the area of operations and enforce them. Prohibit smoking-related materials around tank vehicles and in petroleum storage areas. Keep a fire extinguisher available and ready for use. Inspect fire extinguishers monthly for serviceability. Record the inspection date and the initials or name of the inspector on a tag. Bond and ground all vehicles and equipment before any operation or while parked for long periods in designated parking areas. Facilitate bonding and grounding vehicles involved in a fuel transfer by touching the hose, drop tube, or discharge nozzle to the fill cap before removing it. Keep the nozzle in contact with the fill opening at all times during a transfer operation. When the operation is complete, close the fill cover before disconnecting bonding and grounding cables. Stop transfer operations if there is an enemy attack, electrical storm, or fire in the area. Keep all possible sources of vapor ignition away during fuel transfer operations. Make sure all electrical equipment used around tankers is in good working condition and labeled as explosion-proof, if such equipment is available. Use explosion-proof extension lights, flashlights, and electric lanterns. Do not neglect normal safety procedures just because equipment is supposedly explosion-proof. Do not drag hoses across the rear decks of combat vehicles or near their exhaust systems. Armor plates and exhaust pipes become hot during operation and could damage hoses and cause a fire. Immediately stop fuel flow if there is a fire. Avoid driving near fires. Clothes soaked with fuel become highly flammable. If clothes become soaked with fuel, wet the clothes with water and remove them. If no water is available, temporarily ground yourself by holding a piece of grounded equipment with both hands. Then remove your hands from the grounded equipment and take off your fuel-soaked clothes. Static electricity. Static electricity is an imbalance of electric charges within or on the surface of a material. The charge remains until it is able to move away by means of an electric current or electrical discharge. Static electricity is named in contrast to current electricity, which flows through wires or other conductors and transmits energy. A static electric charge is created whenever two surfaces contact and separate, and at least one of the surfaces has a high resistance to electrical current and is therefore an electrical insulator. The effects of static electricity are familiar to most people because people can feel, hear, and even see the spark as the excess charge is neutralized when brought close to a large electrical conductor, for example, a path to ground, or a region with an excess charge of the opposite polarity, positive or negative. The familiar phenomenon of a static shock, more specifically an electrostatic discharge, is caused by the neutralization of charge. The flowing movement of flammable liquids can build up static electricity. Non-polar liquids, such as gasoline, diesel, and jet fuels, exhibit significant ability for charge accumulation and charge retention during high-velocity flow. Electrostatic discharges can ignite the fuel vapor. When the electrostatic discharge energy is high enough, it can ignite a fuel vapor and air mixture. Different fuels have different flammable limits and require different levels of electrostatic discharge energy to ignite. This buildup cannot be predicted or eliminated, but it can be controlled. Static electricity can be controlled and dissipated through several safety measures. Petroleum handlers should always assume that static electricity is present during all phases of operations. This includes long-term storage. Sparking and a subsequent fire and explosion from static electricity is a real and ever-present danger in petroleum transfer operations. Outer clothing, especially if it is made of wool or synthetic fiber, builds a charge not only by absorbing part of the body charge, but also by rubbing against the body or underwear. When the wearer removes the charged clothes or moves them away from the body, the electrical tension or voltage increases to the danger point. If the clothes are saturated with fuel, flames may be produced due to the discharge of static electricity. Exposed nails on worn footwear can also cause sparks. This is a serious danger since fuel spills in refueling areas are common and fuel vapors near the ground ignite easily. Before opening aircraft or vehicle fuel ports or doing any other operation that would permit fuel vapors to escape into the air, fuel handlers should bond themselves to the equipment by taking hold of it with a bare hand. If it is an aircraft or piece of metal equipment, the soldier should take hold of a bare metal part with both hands for a few seconds. Although this type of bonding will not completely discharge static electricity, it will equalize the charge of the body with the charge on the equipment. Fuel handlers also should avoid inhalation of vapors. They should not remove any piece of clothing within 50 feet of a refueling operation or in an area where a flammable vapor-air mixture may exist. Proper clothing and footwear reduces the chance of static electricity buildup on fuel handlers and is discussed later in this chapter. Bonding and grounding. The two primary static electricity control methods are bonding and grounding. Bonding is connecting two electrically conductive objects to equalize electrical potential, static charges, on them. Bonding does not dissipate static electricity. It equalizes the charge on the two objects to stop the sparking in the presence of flammable vapors. This will most likely occur when a vehicle or aircraft is being refueled. In this case, a fuel handler should bond the refueling vehicle to the vehicle being fueled. Bond the fuel nozzle to the vehicle or equipment by maintaining metal-to-metal contact between the nozzle and vehicle or equipment being refueled. The bond is maintained until the refuel operation is complete. Earth grounding is the process by which an electrical connection is made to the earth. The earth, particularly soft, damp earth, can accept electrical charges. The charges then dissipate harmlessly. To ground equipment, the handler must provide a conductive electrical path into the ground. This prevents a static charge from collecting on the surfaces of equipment where it could discharge as a spark. Fuel handlers form this path by connecting a conductive cable from the piece of equipment to a conductive metal rod driven into the earth to the level of permanent ground moisture. The connection to the equipment must be to a clean, unpainted, non-oxidized metal surface. Frozen soil, a particular problem in Arctic regions, makes it difficult to get a good ground. Fuel handlers may need to drive in grounding rods at several different locations to as great a depth as possible to ground a single piece of equipment. Another solution is to try to locate a grounding system near a heat source. If there are metal buildings or underground pipes nearby, a ground connection may be made to them. Rocky or sandy soils are poor grounds because they have low conductivity. Chemicals can be used to condition the soil and raise its conductivity. Magnesium sulfate, Epsom salts, copper sulfate, blue vitriol, calcium chloride, sodium chloride, common table salt, and potassium nitrate, saltpeter, are some of the chemicals used for soil conditioning. Table salt will probably be the easiest to get in the field. To use salt, prepare a grounding site by digging a hole about 1 foot deep and 3 feet across. Mix 5 pounds of salt with 5 gallons of water. Pour the mixture into the hole and allow it to be absorbed. Install the ground rod and wire and keep the soil around the rod moist. Ground rods are usually made of copper weld steel. A portable sliding hammer grounding rod is 3/4 inch in diameter and 6 feet long.
It has one pointed end that is driven into the earth and a bolt and nut at the other end for connecting a grounding cable. Use the following considerations to install, mark, test, and inspect ground rods. To install, drive the rod into the earth to a sufficient depth to reach below the permanent ground moisture level. On a fixed airfield apron or ramp, drive the rod to a depth where its top is level with the surrounding surface. At other facilities, drive the rod to a depth where its top is low enough or high enough so people will not trip over it. If the rod's top is level with the surrounding surface, remove some soil from around the top to give room for attaching ground cable clips. Fuel handlers may use tie-down bolts embedded in concrete ramps at fixed airfields as ground connections if they meet resistance requirements. Make ground connections to tie-down bolts on the eye of the bolt itself, not the tie-down ring. To mark, encircle each rod installed in a hard surface permanently or semi-permanently with an 18-inch diameter yellow circle with a 2-inch, approximately 5 centimeters, black border surrounding it. These circles must be painted on. Stencil in black the words static ground connection and a numeric or alphanumeric rod identification code in the circle's yellow portion. Local policies and conditions determine fixed rod numbering and spacing. No requirement exists to mark temporary ground rods this way. To test, observe ground rods daily for damage. Test them after installation and every 5 years after, when obvious damage is discovered, and after any damage repair. An effective grounding system has a resistance of 10,000 ohms or less. The unit or agency that maintains fixed grounding systems is required to keep a log identifying each rod, the date tested, and the resistance reading. If a rod's measured resistance is greater than 10,000 ohms, immediately mark the rod defective, do not use, and remove or replace it as soon as possible. Test grounding systems with a multimeter. No quick or easy way exists to test a ground's adequacy. The testing procedures can be relatively complex. The required test equipment is bulky and expensive. For these reasons, several methods and levels of grounding and bonding that meet the Army's various operational needs are outlined as follows. Some of these methods require special authorization prior to use. Method 1. Equipment is grounded to a rod or rods with a measured resistance equal to or less than 10,000 ohms. These rod or rods ground both the refueling system or tanker and the vehicle or aircraft being refueled. In addition, the fuel handler bonds the refueling nozzle to the aircraft or vehicle the fuel handler is refueling. Method 1 is the only acceptable grounding method, unless granted exceptions by appropriate authorities, at any fixed airfield or refueling point. It is the safest method. Method 2. In some instances, equipment is not available to test resistance to ground. In such cases, fuel handlers can ground refueling equipment to untested grounding systems, subject to certain constraints. The unit commander authorizes this method when the location, tactical situation, or type of operation makes it impossible to test ground rods or to mark them in the manner appropriate for fixed rods. The grounding rod or rods are driven to a specific depth in the ground, depending on the type of soil at the site. The depth is determined by the normal depth of permanent ground moisture in the various soil types. The fuel handler grounds the refueling vehicle. The vehicle or aircraft being refueled is then grounded, and nozzle is bonded to the aircraft. Use this method only when it is absolutely impossible to use the first method. Method 3. In situations where the climate, terrain, or tactical condition make it impossible to secure a satisfactory ground rod, the authorizing commander may waive requirements to ground the aircraft or vehicle being refueled and fuel dispenser, system, or refueler. The authorizing commander is the commander one level above the operating unit. However, that commander cannot waive the requirement to bond the fuel dispenser to the vehicle or aircraft under any circumstances. Method 3 relies on bonding alone. A bond is made between the aircraft and the refueling system or refueler, and between the nozzle and the aircraft. Contact between an unbonded object and the system could produce a spark that could set off an explosion or fire. This is the least desirable method, since it does nothing to dissipate electrical charges. Ground. Personal protection. Personal protection is key in preventing personal injury or death. It is the individual soldier's responsibility to take the necessary measures and precautions, to include wearing personal protective equipment, using safe working practices and techniques, and learning proper first responder procedures to ensure petroleum operations safety is foremost in all activities. The command's responsibility is to ensure all protective clothing, training, and measures required by Occupational Safety and Health Administration, the Army Safety Program, and the safety data sheet is provided to the fuel handler. When handling petroleum products, fuel handlers adhere to the safety considerations delineated in the appropriate safety data sheet in order to protect their own health. Eye and skin contact should be avoided through the use of protective eyewear, fuel handler gloves, and protective outer garments. Inhalation exposure can occur from the vapor or aerosol mist during fuel transfers. Site leaders position nearby personnel away from the vapor or aerosol plume. Handling and transfer of fuel should be performed in well-ventilated areas. Clothing should be promptly removed if it becomes wet with fuel. Clothing should be laundered before wearing again. To avoid personal injury, the command and fuel handlers will observe all safety precautions and procedures, observe safety rules when operating, loading, and transferring products, train on administering first aid and artificial respiration, inspect equipment, safety devices, and work areas frequently to ensure safety and to correct hazards, keep the work area free of objects that may cause accidents, wear protective clothing when handling fuels. Clothing includes field wear, hard hat, splash and spray resistant eye protection, hearing protection, fuel resistant gloves, fire retardant clothing, and boots. Wear eye protection, chemical type goggles or face shield whenever there is a likelihood of splashing or spraying liquid. Contact lenses should not be worn, and eyewash water should be provided. Do not wear any wool clothing items or jewelry that may spark against metal surfaces. Avoid exposure to fuel vapors for long periods. Perform petroleum operations in well-ventilated areas. Use only authorized solvents for cleaning, avoiding fuel such as gasoline or kerosene or other toxic agents for cleaning. Use walkways on tank vehicles, tank firewalls, and berms. Do not load, transfer, or move petroleum fuel if an electrical storm is within 3 miles. Ensure personnel bond themselves with equipment prior to performing any petroleum operations. Despite all other actions taken, fires may still occur and may erupt forcefully. The following considerations will assist the fuel handler in preparing for and taking appropriate actions in this event. Have a fire evacuation and firefighting plan as applicable, and ensure your soldiers are knowledgeable on fire evacuation and firefighting procedures. See Unit Safety Officer for guidance. All fire extinguishers and suppression units, handheld, trailer-mounted, vehicle-mounted, and built-in, must be serviceable as required. Fire extinguishers and other firefighting equipment should be located within easy reach, but where it will be safe from a fire. Small fires may be extinguished using a fire extinguisher. The priorities of firefighting are to protect personnel and prevent personal injury and death. A clear path should be made by spraying at the base of the fire near the feet of soldiers entrapped by a fire. Continue making a path until the person is clear of the fire. In the case of larger fires, the priority is to prevent the spread of the fire to structures, equipment, and fuel storage areas. This may be accomplished by spraying aqueous film-forming foam in a manner to prevent the fire from spreading or igniting. Another method is to stay vigilant for burning debris and extinguish it as it lands near areas that are to be protected. Personal protective equipment and individual protective equipment. Personnel wear personal protective equipment or individual protective equipment when handling fuels. It is the command's responsibility to ensure that all protective clothing required by the safety data sheet for the petroleum product handled is provided to the fuel handler. Clothing includes field wear, eye protection, chemical-type goggles or face shield, hearing protection, unit-issued fuel-resistant gloves, and boots. Personnel required to wear personal protective equipment should be trained in its use, be issued the personal protective equipment or individual protective equipment, and ensure its serviceability. This organizational equipment must include fuel-resistant gloves. In addition, personnel should wear shirt sleeves rolled down and buttoned. Avoid wearing or carrying loose items of clothing. Avoid wearing nylon or wool when conducting fuel operations, as nylon or wool produces static electricity. Ensure footwear is serviceable. Avoid wearing contact lenses. The Joint Service Lightweight Integrated Suit Technology Chemical Protective Ensemble and Protective Mask and other individual protective equipment restrict movement and activities. In addition, they make it difficult to perform even the simplest tasks. Personnel may be required to wear mission-oriented protective posture, often referred to as MOP, gear when directed. This normally occurs when threat forces have used seaborne weapons or are likely to do so. Petroleum organizations and units must familiarize their personnel to performing petroleum mission-related tasks while wearing mission-oriented protective posture gear. Supervisors conduct frequent risk assessments on whether soldiers should wear field gear during fueling operations. Field gear attire should be balanced against the facts that a soldier could be severely injured from falling off tank vehicles or possibly injured due to the tactical situation, sniper fire, riots during contingency operations. Unless directed otherwise by the commander, soldiers should wear full field gear in forward, remote areas, since the danger from related injuries is high. If a soldier has their weapon, it needs to be properly secured so it does not get in their way or jeopardize safety while conducting refueling operations. The wearing of field gear is at the commander's discretion. In addition, personnel should wear fuel-resistant or nitrile or neoprene gloves and protective clothing to keep fuel off the skin. Ensure proper eyewear, goggles, safety glasses, or splash and spray-resistant eyewear, and hearing protection is worn when handling fuels or operating equipment. Wear authorized fuel handler's coveralls, which offers fuel resistance protection and incorporates a static dissipative knit. Wear shirt sleeves rolled down and do not carry loose items on your person. Ensure head protection is properly worn and secure when conducting hot refueling. A National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health approved air purifying respirator with organic vapor cartridges or canisters may be permissible under certain circumstances. These circumstances include where airborne concentrations are or may be expected to exceed exposure limits or for odor or irritation. Protection provided by air purifying respirators is limited. Personnel use a positive pressure, air-supplied respirator if there is a potential for uncontrolled release, exposure levels are not known, in oxygen-deficient atmospheres, or any other circumstance where an air-purifying respirator may not provide adequate protection. First aid for petroleum-related injuries. First aid, self-aid, and buddy aid is urgent and immediate life-saving and other measures which can be performed for casualties or performed by the victims themselves by non-medical personnel when medical personnel are not immediately available, FM4-02. If any type of petroleum product comes in contact with skin, wash it off immediately with soap and water. If any type of fuel gets in the eyes or mouth, flush them thoroughly and repeatedly with water. Do not swallow the water. Do not induce vomiting. Get medical help as quickly as possible. If possible, establish an eyewash at a refueling site. In remote areas where water is limited, ensure a substantial supply of water is on hand for petroleum handling personnel. If any type of fuel gets on clothes, promptly and carefully remove the clothes or saturate the clothing with water. If possible, have the person make direct contact with a known grounding point prior to removing the contaminated clothing. These procedures protect the soldier from the danger of a static spark igniting the soldier's clothes as the soldier removes them. Safety data sheets give additional first aid procedures for exposure to hazardous materials. Commanders must ensure personnel are trained on combat lifesaver procedures to include artificial respiration. Refueling sites and equipment have adequate first aid kits and equipment to conduct first aid. For additional information regarding first aid, refer to TC4-02.1. Petroleum firefighting and prevention. The primary danger while handling petroleum is the chance of a fire or explosion. The following sections address the classes of fires, types of firefighting equipment, and key planning considerations. Classes of fires. Fires are distinguished by five categories. Class A fires involve combustibles such as wood, brush, grass, and rubbish. Water is the best agent for extinguishing Class A fires. Class B fires involve flammable liquids such as gasoline and other fuels, solvents, lubricants, paints, and similar substances that leave no embers. A smothering or diluting agent best extinguishes Class B fires. Class C fires involve live electrical equipment such as motors, switches, and transformers. A smothering agent, which is not an electrical conductor, best extinguishes Class C fires. Class D fires involve combustible metals such as titanium, zirconium, sodium, and potassium. A smothering agent best extinguishes Class D fires. Class K fires involve combustible liquids used in cooking, such as grease, animal fats, and cooking oils. Wet chemical fire extinguishers best extinguish Class K fires. Eliminating the elements of fire. Fires require three elements to keep burning: fuel, heat, and oxygen. Eliminating or sufficiently controlling one or more of these elements will extinguish the fire. Eliminating the fuel element. Immediately shut off the fuel flow if possible. If the fire is in a broken pipeline, plug the brake if possible. Stop the flow at the nearest valve and use foam on the burning fuel pools. Do not use water and foam together. Water will destroy the foam's effectiveness to smother the fire and cause the fuel to spread. Eliminating the heat element. Heat is transmitted by radiation, conduction, and convection. Heat is conducted through a solid or liquid substance. Convection takes place as heated air rises from the fire and circulates. This transfers heat to all combustibles in the area. Water, in stream, spray, or fog, is the best way to reduce heat and vapor. However, only trained people should use this method. Inexperienced people might cause the fire to spread when using water to extinguish it. Usually, the best way to protect a storage tank near a fire is to cool it with water. Eliminating the oxygen element. It is impossible to remove all air in the area of a fire. However, firefighters can dilute the air and smother the fire. Diluting the air means reducing the percentage of oxygen in the air to the point it can no longer support combustion. Foam is one of the best ways to blanket and smother a petroleum fire. To do this, spread a tight covering of foam on the burning surface to cut off all air. Foam spreads easily on the top of a burning tank. Foam tends to break down in a fire. Continue to apply foam long and fast enough to let the tank cool below the fuel ignition temperature. The depth of foam needed can vary from a few inches for a small tank to several feet for a large tank. The foam source should furnish enough foam to put out a fire in the largest protected single area, rather than several small fires at one time. Fuel handlers can also smother small fires with sand, wet burlap, or a blanket. Sources of ignition. An ignition source must be present in order for fires or explosions to occur. A combustible material, petroleum vapor, and oxygen are also required. Little can be done to control oxygen in a field environment. However, the following work considerations will assist in controlling ignition sources, vapors, and increase the safety of personnel and equipment. To avoid fire or explosions, the command and bulk fuel handlers control sources of ignition for personal safety, environmental considerations, and conservation and protection of fuel supplies. Static electricity, open flames, equipment sparking, and even sunlight can constitute ignition sources. Use only authorized tools, equipment, and clothing. Use explosion-proof lights and flashlights. Friction and impact between tools and materials can create sparks. Do not use open flames, heating stoves, or other devices that give off heat, sparks, static electricity, and other sources of ignition in petroleum storage and work areas. Prohibit the use of cell phones and unapproved electronic devices during refueling operations and in areas where petroleum vapors are present. Prohibit the use of smoking material, including cigarettes, matches, and electronic smoking devices in the vicinity of bulk fuel storage, as they are the single greatest cause of fires. Keep tools and equipment in safe and good working condition. Electrical equipment and wires create fire hazards when they produce exposed electrical currents, arcs and sparks, or when they create excessive amounts of heat. Pay particular attention to safety data sheet for cleaning and storing instructions. Spontaneous heating of a combustible material takes place when its characteristics and the right environmental conditions cause a heat-producing chemical reaction. Storing rags and waste in proper containers and disposing of them properly can prevent this. Strictly enforce no smoking rules and place no smoking within 50 feet signs where they can be seen before the individual is within 50 feet of the operation. Always ground and bond petroleum equipment being used, such as the pump, filter separator, tank truck, storage tanks, and the equipment receiving fuel during petroleum operations. Ensure spark arresters are on all equipment used in and near petroleum storage areas. Avoid high-frequency radar equipment beams in that they can ignite a flammable vapor-air mixture. The beams can ignite the mixture by inducing heat in solid materials in the beam's path or by intensifying an existing electrical charge or stray current to the point where it will arc or discharge as a spark. Eliminate hazards regarding welding and cutting using open flames that can ignite vapors. Any welding performed on or near petroleum product use equipment must be closely controlled to prevent fires or explosions. Handlers thoroughly clean and reduce vapors to acceptable safety levels in storage tanks, tank cars, tank vehicles, drums, and vehicle fuel tanks before cutting or welding them, and check local policies for doing such work. Vapor and combustible materials. Vapors and combustible materials must be controlled and minimized in order to prevent fire by reducing or eliminating the fuel source. In the event a fire occurs, minimizing vapors and combustible materials will ensure the fire presents less danger and risk. To minimize danger from vapors and combustible materials, control spills with a proactive spill prevention program in accordance with DODM 4715.05, Volume 1, AR 200-1, and local SOPs. Frequently inspect tank seams, joints, piping, valves, pumps, and other equipment for leaks. Repair leaks immediately. Replace defective hoses, gaskets, and faucets. Stencil collapsible tanks and hoses with wet dates. Ensure work and storage areas are well ventilated. Beware of unventilated spaces, such as the inside of tank vehicles. Use drip pans, catch basins, or absorbent materials. Place them where they are accessible in the event of a leak or spill. In addition, place them in the most probable areas of Class 3 leaks or spills in petroleum operations. Fill containers carefully to avoid overfilling and overflow. Empty fuel pipelines, storage tanks, drums, cans, or containers contain residual vapors and are more dangerous than a filled container. Inspect drums and containers for serviceability prior to use. Mark the drums and containers to note approval if they are fit for use. Close containers that hold or have held flammable products. Carefully open containers that have or may have had flammable products. Heat and temperature fluctuations can cause pressure to build up, which may suddenly release vapors when the container is opened. Remember, overhead, top-loading, filling is not authorized unless approved and signed by the commander or the commander's designated representative. When overhead, make sure the drop tube or discharge hose is close to the bottom of the tank. Pump fuel at a reduced rate until the end of the hose is covered, then switch to a normal flow rate. In addition, where possible, ensure metal-to-metal contact between the dispensing hose and the bottom of the tank exists. This helps prevent vapors and the buildup of static electricity. Ensure all nozzles and hand-actuated valves are constantly tended to while they are being used in refueling operations. Tactical systems shall not use notched handles on nozzles. Make sure the notches are modified so that the nozzles must be held open by hand. Ensure areas are clean. Proper storage and disposal of materials is necessary. Relatively small heat sources easily ignite trash, rags, scrap wood, and other such items. Use fire-resistant wall lockers and cupboards for storage in petroleum supply areas. Never store newspapers or rags in them. Discard petroleum waste in accordance with local procedures and in an environmentally safe manner. Label safety cans or other flammable liquid waste containers with a flash point below 100 degrees Fahrenheit, 37.8 degrees Celsius, in accordance with 49 CFR Part 172. Ensure fuel nozzles and hoses are capped when not in use. Fire extinguishers. The primary method for fighting petroleum fires at smaller Class 3 supply points is portable carbon dioxide fire extinguishers. Procedures for placement include: place one at each pump, receiving and issuing point, and package product storage area. Place other extinguishers where soldiers can access them and critical areas of the supply point quickly. Develop a supply point map showing extinguisher locations. Place a map at each checkpoint and at several locations in the area of operation. Locate fire extinguishers, or signs indicating the closest one, throughout the supply point. The following are general guidelines for the use of fire extinguishers. According to National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, standards, disposable fire extinguishers must be replaced every 12 years. Refer to the date stenciled on the fire extinguisher. All NFPA standards can be found at the NFPA website. The website address is listed in the references section of this publication. Fire extinguishers must be in working order. Know how to operate the fire extinguisher. Know which extinguisher to use for each type of fire. Inspect frequently to see if extinguishers have been damaged. Portable fire extinguishers must be visually inspected monthly. The inspection assures that fire extinguishers are in their assigned place, are not blocked or hidden, and are mounted in accordance with NFPA 10. Pressure gauges show adequate pressure to determine whether leakage has occurred. A carbon dioxide extinguisher must be weighed. Pin and seals are in place. Fire extinguishers show no visual sign of damage or abuse. Nozzles are free of blockage. Additional mandatory inspections are required. Annual, 6-year, and 12-year maintenance checks. Recharge or exchange extinguishers immediately after use. Follow manufacturer's instructions for charging, maintaining, and using the extinguisher. Fire extinguisher types. The primary firefighting tool is usually fire extinguishers. The Army uses both portable handheld extinguishers and wheeled units. Portable handheld fire extinguishers are effective only in a fire's earliest stages. Wheeled fire extinguishers offer more flexibility because they have longer hoses and greater capacities. Fire extinguishers are also referred to by the amount, weight, of agent in the extinguisher, for example, 20 pounds, and by the square footage the extinguisher can cover and the type of fire it can put out, which is expressed as a number and letter, for example, 20 BC. Minimum 20 BC fire extinguishers are required for refueling operations. The exception is FARP operations, and a minimum of 20-pound fire extinguisher is required. Anytime fuel is moving, fire extinguishers will be readily available to the pump operator and all nozzle operators. The following are different types of fire extinguishers and their uses. Water extinguishers are filled with water and are typically pressurized with air and are suitable for Class A fires only. Carbon dioxide extinguishers are most effective on Class B and C, liquids and electrical, fires. Since the gas disperses quickly, these extinguishers are only effective from 3 to 8 feet. The carbon dioxide is stored as a compressed liquid in the extinguisher. As it expands, it cools the surrounding air. The cooling will often cause ice to form around the horn, where the gas is expelled from the extinguisher. Dry chemical extinguishers are usually rated for multiple purpose use. They contain an extinguishing agent and use a compressed, non-flammable gas as a propellant. Works well on Class B and C fires. The Purple K extinguisher is a dry chemical extinguisher using the extinguishing agent potassium bicarbonate, commonly called Purple K. This fire extinguisher is designed for use on Class B and C fires. Purple K is highly corrosive. Purple K extinguishers usually have a 20-pound capacity. The Fire Suppression Equipment System, FSES, is standard with large Class 3 bulk supply systems. The FSES has the capability of extinguishing 1,500 square feet petroleum fire with two agents, potassium bicarbonate powder and aqueous film-forming foam. The FSES is part of the IPDS. Firefighting tactics. To fight and extinguish petroleum fires effectively requires a good firefighting plan. Every Class 3 supply point operation should have a fire prevention and firefighting plan. The plan may be very simple or complex depending on the operation. No matter what, it should cover in detail all possible fire dangers and issues. It should also address firefighting resources to include fire departments and engineer firefighting teams where available. Soldiers and their supervisors at the Class 3 supply point have the primary responsibility for controlling and extinguishing fires. However, they should immediately notify their chain of command and outside support agencies, such as the fire department, when a fire breaks out. Ensure the firefighting plan covers fire extinguishers, trained firefighting personnel, evacuation routes, fire drills, fire investigation, and any other recommendations from the local or station fire department. Supply point supervisors making firefighting plans. Assign 2 people to each fire point in the supply point and 3 personnel per FSES. Make sure all soldiers in the supply point know and practice procedures for using the fire extinguishers. Form a firefighting team that drills extensively on firefighting techniques to quickly react to and extinguish larger fires. A 5-person team is appropriate for the unit-level supply point. Set up evacuation routes for vehicles and personnel. If a fire breaks out, all vehicles must be quickly moved from the area. Never lock steering wheels on petroleum vehicles. Require all personnel not involved in fighting the fire to leave. Evacuation routes should be the most direct route out of the supply point. Show these routes on the maps with the fire extinguisher placement. In addition, supervisors use fire drills to train personnel to react quickly to fires. Fire drills should be as realistic as possible. Evacuation routes should be used and fire extinguishers staffed. Fire drills are conducted as the tactical situation permits. When using fire extinguishers, soldiers should remember the acronym PASS. Pull the pin. Aim at the base of the fire. Squeeze the trigger. Sweep side to side. Investigate all fires to gain knowledge that may help prevent future fires. It is important to know how and why a fire started. Check for an unsafe working condition or an improper act done by a soldier. Fire inspections. The key to petroleum fire safety is an active fire prevention program. Where the tactical situation allows for periodic fire inspections, make sure all possible fire prevention precautions are in place and are being followed. Ensure the inspection program covers the entire operation. Here are some key inspection points. Fire extinguishers are fully charged, properly placed, and clearly marked. They must also be protected, ready for use, and available in the number and type required. All equipment, grounds, bonds, and cathodic protection devices should be checked. Berms around storage tanks must be serviceable and adequate. Drains must be closed except during supervised draining. Pumps should be leak and spill free. Spills must be cleaned up and reported immediately. Inspect pump houses, if present, for proper housekeeping and proper ventilation. Tank farms should be clear and free of dry grass and weeds. Check areas near open flames for possible sources of flammable vapor release. Ensure no smoking within 50 feet signs are posted in such locations to ensure there is no smoking within 50 feet of fuel operations. Post and enforce rules covering those areas that permit hot work, such as cutting and welding. Environmental considerations. We must take care of the environment. That is, practice environmental stewardship. The definition of stewardship is taking care of property while also caring about the rights of others. We must plan our operations without harming the environment. Good environmental stewardship enables leaders to take better care of soldiers and their families. It also saves resources vital to operational readiness. The Army has the task of reducing the environmental impact on its installations and units throughout the United States and the world. Petroleum and water units, by their nature, have a huge impact on the environment. It is critical for the leaders and soldiers in these units to follow safe, legal environmental practices. By doing so, they protect their health and the health of those around them. They also prevent long-term environmental damage that can lead to fines and other legal actions. Environmental responsibilities of personnel. The commander must instill an environmental ethic in their soldiers. The commander sets the tone for environmental compliance. The commander is ultimately responsible, however. All soldiers are responsible for complying with all applicable environmental laws in their area of operations and their unit. An effective training program allows personnel to carry out their responsibilities. Commanders ensure all personnel are trained on environmental issues. The commander should appoint an environmental compliance officer or hazardous waste coordinator. This person works with other environmental personnel. The commander also makes sure environmental laws are followed. The commander identifies what their requirements and priorities are concerning environmental training and qualifications of unit personnel, environmental compliance inspections that may affect the unit, and common environmental problem areas and how to avoid them. The commander also makes sure the unit environmental SOP details environmental issues and procedures the unit must follow in their theater or area of operations. The environmental compliance in a petroleum supply operations program should cover hazardous materials management in accordance with DAPAM 710-7. Hazardous waste management in accordance with the United States Army Environmental Command and the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act. Hazard communications in accordance with DODI 6050.05 and AR 385-10. A spill prevention, control, and countermeasure plan that identifies fuel storage locations, therefore potential spill sites, and those measures taken to prevent a spill from occurring. A spill contingency plan is required in conjunction with the spill prevention, control, and countermeasure plan. The spill contingency plan identifies what to do, what resources are available, and who to contact in the event a spill does occur. The station response team members should be identified by name and position. The unit should have training on the plan and standard operating procedures. Environmental Stewardship Protection Program measures. Personnel at all levels must protect our environment. This includes soldiers, NCOs, officers, commanders, and appointed personnel. Soldiers' duties include following installation environmental policies, unit SOPs, ARs, and environmental laws and regulations, making sound decisions in everyday activities, advising the chain of command on techniques to ensure environmental regulations are followed, identifying the environmental risks in individual and team tasks, supporting the Army recycling program, reporting hazardous materials and hazardous waste spills immediately. NCO responsibilities include supervising soldiers during petroleum operations to ensure they comply with established environmental protection policies, consideration of the environment in day-to-day decisions, ensuring soldiers know the Army's environmental ethic, training soldiers to be good environmental stewards, building a commitment to environmental protection, identifying environmental risk associated with tasks, planning and conducting environmentally sustainable actions and training, protecting the environment during training and other activities, analyzing the influence of the environment on your mission, integrating environmental considerations into unit activities, training peers and soldiers to identify the environmental effects of plans, actions, and missions, counseling soldiers on the importance of protecting the environment and the results of not complying with environmental laws, incorporating environmental considerations in after-action reviews, supporting the Army recycling program, reporting hazardous material and hazardous waste spills immediately. Officer duties and responsibilities include building an environmental ethic in soldiers, training and counseling subordinates and leaders on stewardship, seeking advice on required personnel training from the local environmental coordinator, enforcing compliance with laws and regulations, always considering the environment in making day-to-day decisions, making sure subordinates know the Army's environmental ethic, committing subordinate leaders to protect the environment, analyzing the influence of the environment on the mission, integrating environmental considerations into unit activities to include identifying the environmental risks associated with unit tasks. Appointed personnel are appointed by the commander and should receive formal training. Their responsibilities include acting as an advisor on environmental regulatory compliance during training, operations, and logistics functions, serving as the commander's eyes and ears for environmental matters, serving as the liaison between the unit and higher headquarters who are responsible for managing the environmental compliance programs and who can provide information on training requirements certifications that unit personnel need, conducting environmental compliance assessments to meet all applicable federal, state, and local regulations concerning environmental regulations. Spill definitions. A spill is broadly defined as a release of any kind of a petroleum product or hazardous substance into the environment. Spill reaction is based largely on the nature of the material spilled. The three types of spills are a small priming spill that covers less than 18 inches in all directions, a small spill that extends less than 10 feet in any direction, covers less than 50 square feet, and is not continuous, a large spill that extends farther than 10 feet in any direction, covers an area in excess of 50 square feet, or is continuous. Reportable spills are based on local and host nation requirements. All personnel involved in fuel handling should be cognizant of the spill reporting requirements. Any spill reaching a stream, creek, river, or any other body of water is reportable and must be contained and completely removed. Any oil spill with the potential to come into contact with the water table will be reported. Harmful quantities violate water quality standards and cause a film, sheen, or discoloration to the surface of the water or adjoining shorelines. They also cause sludge or emulsion to be deposited beneath the surface of the water or upon adjoining shorelines. Spill discovery. The initial component in the spill response plan is discovery. The primary responsibility of a discoverer is to notify the proper authorities who are trained and equipped to deal with an environmental incident. When a spill is discovered, the discoverer will perform the spill drill, react. stop the flow of fuel, contain the spill, absorb/accumulate/dig, containerize the hazardous waste, transmit a report. Defensive actions should begin as soon as possible to prevent or minimize damage to public health and welfare or to the environment. Some general actions include eliminating sources of sparks or flames, controlling the source of the discharge, placing physical barriers such as berms or dikes to deter the spread of the fuel, preventing the discharge of contaminated water into storm drains or the sewer system, recovering the oil or minimize its effects. Recovered fuel and contaminated absorbents, such as rags, are placed in Department of Transportation-approved containers for disposal as hazardous waste. Environmental compliance equipment. Emergency spill response, whether in garrison or in the field, is essential. Some of the items to stock for use in garrison and during field operations could include drip pans, shovels, removal of contaminated soil, digging ditches, and berms, sorbents, designed to absorb petroleum only, containers for contaminated materials, socks or dikes, flexible containment devices for spills on land, booms, floating containment device for spills on water, spill kit and replacement items.